This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. You know those amazingly loud and showy pieces by Beethoven, Liszt, or Schumann? Ever wonder if the piano would break? Strings, pedals, action? Well, today you'll meet an 18-year-old pianist who broke everything on his old piano until his high school music teacher loaned him a Steinway Grand. Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome. This place wasn't here last time we were here. Is this a gorgeous concert hall or what? Today we're, Today we're coming to you from the brand new Bing Concert Hall on the campus of Stanford University in Stanford, California. This place is amazing. Fantastic acoustics, great seating surrounding the stage and starting at stage level. I'm playing the piano and checking out your shoe shine at the same time. For a big, gorgeous hall, it's also a wonderfully intimate space. And by the way, although we are here in Silicon Valley, the hall was not named after a search engine. Helen and Peter Bing, we have a million thanks for them because they've also been old friends of From the Top for a long time, but they've been generous supporters of From the Top, and also we have them to thank for this gorgeous, gorgeous concert hall. And of course, we want to thank our friends at Stanford Live for bringing us here. Appropriately for a show from Stanford, all our young musicians today are from California, but two of them, alums of our show, are actually studying here at the university. Hugo, you're a freshman now. How's your first year going?
I'm having an absolutely tremendous time. I'm learning how to live by myself and function, and I'm meeting all of these great people. I want to give a shout out to the best freshman dorm on campus, Donner.
Yeah.
And I'm spending like eight hours a day with them, probably basically all the time that I'm not sleeping and I'm not doing work and I'm not practicing, and they're just an awesome group of people.
Well, you're having a full life here at Stanford. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Hugo Kitano. He was on our show in 2011 playing Chopin brilliantly. Hugo, as I recall, you're kind of a math and science guy, and Stanford University has always been known for those things, but there's a thriving arts scene here, clearly. So what do you think you'll major in?
I'm currently doing some of the courses that are part of the pre-med track, so I'm thinking about following that, but I'm not exactly sure whether I want to do that or not. I have an interest in neuroscience, and so I think it would be really interesting for me to follow neuroscience and see how the brain is connected to music. That would be really interesting for me.
Very nice way to go. Well, we're very excited to hear you play again, Hugo, this time in a piano trio with 18-year-old violinist Yujin Lee, who will feature later on in the show, solo, and also another alum studying here at Stanford, Anna Wittstruck. Anna, you're in grad school now?
That's right, Chris.
We're going to talk to you a little bit more after we hear you play. Anna, would you now introduce the piece you're going to play?
We are going to play the Scherzo from Mendelssohn's D minor piano trio.
I'm going to come help out and turn pages. Guys, we'll take it from the top. Thank you. Yujin Lee from Los Angeles, our violinist, Anna Wittstruck and Hugo Gaetano, students here at Stanford, cello and piano. They played the scherzo from Mendelssohn's Piano Trio in D minor, opus 49. We're going to hear Yujin play solo later on. But now we're going to talk a little bit more with Anna. Here's an excerpt of a show we recorded in the year 2000. Now, let me see your hands here. You have little tiny tapered fingers, but we've got these wonderful calluses at the end, and so they're almost like pods at the end of your finger.
Yeah, a lot of times I call them ET fingers.
Yeah.
And I hope that if I get good enough, they'll glow.
That's good. Anna, that's you at 13 years old. You sound so confident in that excerpt. Do you remember that experience?
I do. I had a great time the first time I appeared on From the Top, one of those formative musical experiences.
And you were, I mean, how were you there about performing? I mean, were you were pretty confident, I mean, in terms of, I mean, are you fearless now, would you say?
Well, it's funny to think back to it because I really did have just nerves of steel. I think I had this attitude of just, what's next? And here's music in front of me, I'm going to play it, it's going to be fun, and then, you know, we'll go on to something else. And that has changed, I would say, over time. I remember a couple years ago, I performed the Schumann Cello Concerto with the Stanford Symphony Orchestra, and I had spent so much time with this music, thinking through how I wanted every note to sound and every phrase to go, and I get on stage and my bow starts shaking. And I thought, why didn't this happen to me when I was little? And I really think that it has to do with, I mean, on the one hand, having more performance experience also means having more knowledge of what can go wrong. And so fear is part of that. But also just thinking about the music that process being a more complicated one, there being more choices.
A lot of things that can go right in various different ways that you're more aware of now at the ripe old age of 26. What was your experience, Anna, when you had to choose a college for undergrad?
Well, I come from a small town in North Carolina where there weren't many other classical musicians, and so I could not wait to be surrounded by people my age who were as passionate about music as I was. And I went to the North Carolina School of the Arts for my senior year of high school, and I applied to colleges and conservatories and joint programs, and I was all set to go to Cleveland Institute of Music to study with Richard Aaron, who I had been working with and who I just really wanted to study with and to become a cellist. And a letter came in the mail from Princeton University, and I thought it was spam. But it turns out it was an acceptance letter, and I called Richard, and he said, "Go to Princeton. You'd be out of your mind not to. You can study with me anytime." And so there I went.
Wow. And now you're excelling as a grad student here at Stanford, not only as a cellist, but as a conductor.
Yes, I began conducting at Princeton. And when I came to Stanford, I started working with various ensembles. And last year, they hired me as the assistant conductor of the Orchestral Studies program, which is growing. So I oversee directing the Stanford Summer Orchestra, and I do some pops concerts and various things during the year.
Very exciting. I get to have the pleasure of performing with the Stanford Symphony, conducted by Jingdong Cai, at the end of the show. Anna, a great pleasure to have you on the show again and to see you thriving and having a great time here at Stanford.
It's great to
great
see you, Chris.
Great performance, too. Thanks, Anna. Best of luck. Anna Wittstruck, a grad student here at Stanford, an alum of From the Top.
Anna has an amazing story about being a research assistant on a project that had access to Prokofiev's original scores and notes. And guess what? Romeo and Juliet had an alternate ending where the lovers don't die. Anna has posted a blog entry telling that story at fromthetop.org. Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more.
Next up, an outstanding 18-year-old pianist from Diamond Bar, California, near Los Angeles, David Yu. David, would you introduce the piece you're going to play?
Yes, I'll be playing the first movement from Schumann's second piano sonata in G minor.
And talk a little bit about this initial tempo marking, so rasch wie möglich.
It means in German, as fast as humanly possible.
There are some amendments to that marking throughout the movement, though, aren't there?
Yes, towards the end of the movement, there are two extra markings. One is schneller, meaning faster.
Faster.
And just a few bars later, Schumann adds noch schneller, even faster.
Even faster. Well, Schumann is in good hands. We're looking forward to hearing this. Thank you. David Yu, 18-year-old pianist from Diamond Bar, California, playing the opening movement of Robert Schumann's Sonata No. 2 in G minor. David is a Jack Kent Cook young artist. Bravo, David. That had all the tempestuousness and emotional tightrope walking that we expect of Schumann, but always in extremely poised hands. It was a great pleasure hearing you play that piece. Schumann's one of my favorites. Joanne mentioned at the top of the show that you used to practice on a really bad baby grand until... That's just a bad sound effect. Did it really fall apart like that?
Yeah.
Wow. Just all at once or a little bit at a time?
It took a while.
Yeah? Tell us.
It all started when I was working on Liszt, La Campanella.
Of course.
Which demands a lot of, you know, energy.
A lot of hard playing.
Yeah, hard playing. And one day it started with just one string broken, and then it's usually not a big deal, and then you can always call someone to fix it. And then it turned out, you know, there are three strings on...
Per key, yes.
Per key, yeah. Or two. Yeah. And when one is broken, the impact of the hammer, it's spread to the other strings because the string's not there anymore.
Yes.
And in a few minutes, that key, all the three strings was gone, and I broke six that day.
How many?
Six.
Wow, in one day. And eventually, how many? I mean, like 30 strings it broke.
39.
39. So he's bragging about it now. Okay. So listen, but so then what happened after that? The pedals? Something wrong with the pedals?
Yeah, it was Liszt, but a different piece of Liszt. The climax where you know, all is built up and it's finally ready to, you know, explode.
Yeah.
I guess I slammed the pedal too hard, and then what you just heard, that's exactly what it sounded like.
So, the whole pedal assembly just came off.
Yeah. Gone.
That Liszt music ought to come with a disclaimer, you know?
Yeah.
Parental advisory, you know? Luckily, your father's an engineer, so he was actually able to intuit how to get the pedals back on?
Yes, he majored in engineering in college, so within a few minutes with some tools, he was able to get it back together, thank God.
But still, I mean, being the musician you are, I know you got kind of desperate to find a place to practice on a better piano. The director of your high school music program certainly noticed.
David had been sneaking into school, basically, and using the piano, actually in our wood shop, for 6 to 7 hours a day. And we just knew that with his level of dedication, we had to do something to help him out. So we sent our really nice Steinway to his house where we'd have something to practice. We figured it was either do that or he was going to end up getting arrested for trespassing. So it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Sounds like a great guy. I know he's meant a lot to you. First of all, tell us his name.
Mr. Steve Acciani. He's a guide in life also, not just as a musician, but as an individual, as a person, you know, in society. And almost a second father ever since I met him 4 or 5 years ago. You know, he's always there. You can always, you know, tell him your concerns, and he's always willing to help, you know. It's amazing how dedicated he is. You know, he helps out financially, and also, you know, he's here.
He came all the way
from
Diamond Bar?
All the way from Diamond Bar. He's that dedicated.
Well, thanks, Steve. Brilliant performance, David. Wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
We wish you all the best. David Yu, 18 years old, our pianist from Diamond Bar, California. And the California kids just keep on coming. Gathering on stage now are the members of one of the great pillars of the youth music scene here in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Girls Chorus. And their music director, Valerie Saint-Agathe, has joined me at the mics. Valerie, how many girls have you brought with you today, and what is the age range of this particular group?
So we have today 34 girls, and they have been through the whole chorus choir, the courses of the school of the choir, and they are between 12 and 17 years old. And so now they are in the performance group for Chorissima.
So yes, Carissima is not just a colloquial name, but this is your name for the A squad of this particular ensemble. We're going to hear these fine young musicians sing two pieces. Would you please introduce the first?
Yes, the first one is named Slava, which means glory. It's a piece from the six choruses of Sergei Rachmaninoff, written for women voices.
The San Francisco Girls Chorus, conducted by Valerie Santacate, performing Slava, Be Glorious, from six choruses by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Susan Soner was the accompanist to the Corissima Girls. We're going to talk briefly with two members of the chorus, Renee Theodore, 12, and Sarah Ancheta, 14 years old. Given what we just heard, it's no surprise that this group is the go-to children's chorus for the San Francisco Opera. Renee, what's that like?
Being in the opera is such a great opportunity because we get to see big productions of music with the San Francisco Opera. We have lots of downtime because a lot of the time we're in the first act and the last act, and we go on stage, we come off, we take all our makeup off, and then we go backstage, and then we come back, and we wait, and then we go back, and we sing, and then it's done. So we have about 20 minutes on stage and 3 hours where we have to be there, and eating dinner, waiting around, playing card games. And it's a great bonding experience because you're with a group of girls, and some of them you might not have talked to without being in the opera. And it's great because you make friends that will be your friends for a long time.
That's right. And you're certainly getting a real taste of life as a professional singer, waiting to go on, you know, hurry up and wait, as you say. But you must miss a lot of school when you're rehearsing and performing in an opera. Do your teachers just let you have a pass because singing with the opera is so cool? Sarah, what's the
Well, not exactly. So we still have to do all of our work. So usually, like, the day before, the week before, you'll talk to your teachers, and they'll give you all the assignments that you'll have to turn in for the next day. And then we have something called studio school, where if you have a late-night performance, then instead of going to school early the next morning, you go to studio school instead, which is usually at the Opera Building. And they have studio school teachers, which can they proctor your exams and make sure you're doing your homework. So
that sounds pretty glamorous, sort of the movie star lifestyle, you know, education on this set, you know, it's nice. Now, ladies and gentlemen, truth be told, I know this chorus pretty well. We have a history. I was commissioned a couple of years ago to make some pieces for us to sing and play together. And I came up with the idea of making a suite of four songs from Joni Mitchell's debut album, Song to a Seagull. So I'm going to join the choir now at the piano to perform one of those arrangements. This is The Pirate of Penance.
Smoking cabaret.
Pirate of Penance, one of four songs from a suite of Joni Mitchell songs called Song to a Seagull, which I arranged for the San Francisco Girls Chorus. Valerie Saint-Agathe conducted.
Our own Christopher O'Reilly has just recorded Liszt's virtuoso piano transcriptions of music by Berlioz, Mozart, Schubert, Schumann, and Wagner. O'Reilly's Liszt is out on CD or Blu-ray on Oxingale Records. More information at oxingale.com.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music, online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from Bing Concert Hall on the campus of Stanford University in Stanford, California. Up next, an outstanding classical guitarist who's just 12 years old. Today's show from Stanford is made possible with support from the Hewlett Foundation, the Mellon Foundation, and Helen and Peter Bing. Special thanks to Classical KDFC. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. That 12-year-old guitarist Joanne just mentioned is out on stage with me now. From Sacramento, please welcome Chase Onodera. Welcome, Chase. What have you got to play for us?
I'll be playing Heitor Villa-Lobos' first prelude in E minor.
The stage is yours. Thank you.
Chase Onodera, our 12-year-old guitarist from Sacramento, California, performing the Prelude No. 1 in E minor by Heitor Villa-Lobos. Wonderful playing there, Chase. I love your fingers, not just landing in the right place, but you have like this great move, like a great pitcher. You just know every note is going to be there. There's the wind up, and then it's just all over the place. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful playing. Chase, I understand you enjoy debate at school. That's one of your strengths. What sorts of things have you debated lately?
Some of the topics include stand your ground laws do more harm than good, and cities should provide free Wi-Fi.
Yes, those are good things. I'd like you to debate two propositions, if you will, and I want you to make an affirmative argument for the first one and a dissenting argument for the second. You ready for this? Okay, the first one is, you should only practice the guitar for half an hour each day.
So I would say that it's not always the best to practice large amounts if it's not going to be very good practice.
If it's just going to be spinning your wheels, just going over it and over it again, right?
I would say to take it measure by measure as opposed to playing the whole piece over and over again.
Excellent advice. I know from reading about him that this is his heartfelt advocacy here. So, of course, he's going to do a good job on that argument. Can I just ask one little follow-up question to that one? You told me your guitar idol is Manuel Barueco. And how much does he practice every day?
I'd say about 8 to 10 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's spinning his wheels on that 8 hours a day either, right? Okay, sorry, that was entrapment on my part. I very much apologize. Okay, the second proposition is this. Chase will be majoring in music when he goes to college. Your dissenting opinion?
Well, right now I'm interested in technology. I've taken a couple of robotics classes in the summer. I'm particularly interested in mechanical engineering, but I think it's a little early to tell.
I don't know, the clock is ticking there, Chase, 12 years old. I recently heard about a university that would be just right for you. Technology, music, now where was that? Oh, yeah, Stanford. We'll see you down the road there, Chase. Beautiful playing. Thanks
for
being with us. Chase Onodera, 12 years old, from Sacramento, California.
It's a pretty sweet picture watching 12-year-old Chase play his guitar, and we've got video of his performance on our website. And while you're there, download our weekly podcast. Go to fromthetop.org. Chris.
We're now going to hear from the violinist we met earlier in the program. She'll be performing one of the great pieces for unaccompanied violin. From Los Angeles, this is 18-year-old Eugene Lee performing the solo sonata in E by Eugene Izai.
Jin Lee, 18-year-old violinist from Los Angeles, performing Eugène Ysaÿe's solo violin sonata in E, Opus 27, number 6. Eugène, a formidable piece, and that was a spectacular performance. You really had us in the palm of your hand in that one. That was just great. I know you're a student, Eugène, of Danielle Bellin and Robert Lipset at the Colburn School, and you're one of those lucky pre-college kids who get to board there at Colburn. As a matter of fact, you're in this country completely on your own. But I guess as a result, you've become very close to your teacher, Danielle.
Yes, I want to say I have a two mother with me now. One is my real mom, she's in Korea, and second mom, she's Danielle Bellin, and she's my teacher. I mean, there's so many great things about her. I mean, she always trying to her best as a teacher and as a person. The most thing that I was really impressive about is she always come to my concert and even rehearsal time. Sometimes it's scary, but in a good way. And even today, she's here, and she was here for dress rehearsal, which is really helpful to me and great.
Very supportive, and I know the training that Danielle has given you has really paid off recently. Under her tutelage, you have won both the Stuhlberg and Klein International String Competitions this year, so that's a big year, well deserved. Now, not only do you have great teachers, you're starting to teach students yourself. How do you feel about that?
In my school, which is Colburn School, has a community outreach program, and I have a 10-year-old, a little boy. Before I started to teach him, I thought teaching is way easier than performance because, you know, performance is like I have to practice a lot and get nervous on the stage. But teaching, just sit there and fixing something that the student's doing wrong, it's simple, right? But actually, it is not. I realize that it's more complicated because for performer, they can prepare themselves and they could fix their if they do something wrong. But, you know, teaching, if they don't understand what they're doing wrong and if they don't understand what I give some advice, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, actually, it is really good opportunity to take it.
It's a great way of concretizing your own work on the instrument as well. I mean, it's not just a matter of the student either taking your advice or not taking your advice. It's almost like you're raising them as children because you're also giving them the tools that they need to solve their own problems in life. Yeah. It's fantastic work that you're doing with the kids and just great playing.
Thank you.
We wish you all the best. Thank you, Eugène. Eugène Lee, 18 years old, our violinist from Los Angeles, California. Well, we've been talking a lot about how Stanford isn't just for brainiacs anymore. There are artists here, too. Well, at least brainiacs who happen also to be artists. And to prove that point, we're bringing the Stanford Symphony Orchestra on stage. I have the great pleasure and honor of playing the sprightly finale, Presto, from Maurice Ravel's Concerto in G Major with them, and their conductor, Maestro Jindong Tsai. Jindong, welcome.
Thank you.
You're head of orchestral studies here, and I guess you're particularly proud of the makeup of this orchestra.
Yes, the makeup of the orchestra is very unique at Stanford University. We have 150 people involved in this orchestra program. There's a big orchestra, about 100 people, and 50 orchestra, chamber orchestra. And then more than 90% of the students playing the orchestra are non-music majors. They can be freshmen and to senior in the undergraduate level, or in the graduate, in the undergraduate level, and in graduate level, they can be masters and PhDs and postdoc from all different kinds of disciplines, from neuroscience to space science.
Well, I hope their classwork isn't suffering because they sound great here in the orchestra.
Thank you.
Now, before we leap into this Ravel finale, I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Maestro Jingdong, let's take this from the top.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Begley and Tim Banker, with music director Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore, with Mark Williams and Claire Shepro. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. Orchestra mix by Piper Payne, with Nigel Brown. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.